The Old Testament reading is from Daniel chapter 3. So between our two readings in Matthew and Daniel this week, we have read about 190 verses. Four longer readings today. I thank you for your patience as we've endeavored to work through these passages and do them at least a modicum of justice. Daniel chapter 3, verse 1, hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 80 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the princes, governors, captains, and the captains, judges, and the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then an herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Wherefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth that, he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do ye not serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now, if ye be ready at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hand?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 17 times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, in their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonied, and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire?" They answered and said unto the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. And the princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their hair singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. The first section of the chapter I have as verses 1 through 7. The king makes an image. The description of the image speaks only to its dimensions. There's nothing said about its appearance. Some have postulated that this is like a statue of Nebuchadnezzar himself, or maybe something of the colossus that he had seen in his dream in the prior chapter. I kind of doubt that. I don't want to be too dogmatic on it, but all the proportions are wrong. If Nebuchadnezzar would have made an image of himself, and this image is 70 cubits high and 6 cubits wide, the proportions are all wrong for a body. People would have, if Nebuchadnezzar would have unveiled the statue and said, "Here I am," they would have snickered at him for being a beanpole. And that was not particularly fashionable in the ancient world. In today's world, look how lithe, we would have those kinds of words to use. But not in that day. So I'm not sure at all that this was the image of a person. It may just have been an obelisk or some form of thing. But it had some symbolism on it that made it an object of worship. And that's what's objectionable in the main. It is set up as an object of worship. The location of the image is in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon, which is a little ways from the city of Babylon itself. And so when those scholars ask, well, where was Daniel? Well, especially with Nebuchadnezzar out of town, and then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah out of town, Daniel would have been the more needed in the gate of the king back in the city of Babylon. So it makes good sense that Daniel actually was not there. That's not a it's not a criticism. It's actually adds cogency to the narrative itself. And then the decree concerning the image, because it has some identification as an object of worship, then the decree is that when the music begins to play, everyone will fall down and worship the image. In the next section, then, we have the refusal of the three Hebrews there. They refuse to bow down to the image. They are called out by their fellows in government. And so this matter comes to the king himself, and he inquires of them with regard to whether or not they will worship the image. The response of the Hebrews to his inquiry may sound flippant to us, but that's just the clunkiness of a 17th century translation when it says, "O king, we are not careful to answer thee in this." In other words, what they're saying is, we're not worried about the outcome here. There's something we can't do. That's worship your image. Whatever the disposition of ourselves is, we're not able to do what you're asking us to do. And so we're not worried about the outcome. Outcomes belong to the Lord. He may deliver us. He may not deliver us. That's up to him. What's up to us is the duty that he has given to us. And I cannot tell you how much sanctified wisdom is in that statement. We are not the people of outcomes. We are the people of means. Often what we do, this is the temptation, isn't it? To arrogate to ourselves the knowledge of a prophet. And so we will say, "Oh, I know where this is going, so I'm just not going to do what I'm supposed to do here because I know that it's going to end not so well. I know what this procedure is going to land, and so I'm not going to do it." We don't know. We are not competent. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, if you want to use their Hebrew names, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, what do they know? They know that outcomes belong to God and that means belong to them. They refuse those twin errors that the larger catechism calls out as sins against the first commandment of using unlawful means and trusting in lawful means. They will not do either one of those. Instead, they will maintain a vigil against false worship no matter what the outcome is. Very, very important for us to remember that. "Oh, well, you know, I'll come at odds with my family if I'm insistent on scriptural worship, and coming at odds with my family, then I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to cut myself off from being able to preach the gospel to them." Or we hear all kinds of adjunct means that we're somehow, we just know, are going to take place if we obey the Lord. Well, obedience belongs to us. Outcomes belong to him. So Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah show themselves to be good biblical ethicists in that way. So we're not careful. That is, we're not concerned about the disposition of our own selves. When Isaiah would write about this, "When thou passest through the fire, I will be with thee." Right? Or Hebrews 11, they are memorialized as those who stop the mouth of fire. Right? So, Hebrews 11, they quench the power of fire. Excuse me, that's how it's said there in Hebrews 11. All right, so Nebuchadnezzar then, well, he has his response to their godly response, and that is that he is full of fury, so much so that his face is twisted and contorted out of shape against the three Hebrews, and he commands that they be immediately thrown into the fiery furnace, only that it should be heated seven times more powerfully than it was wont to be heated in the past. Well, this shows a furnace that was very well built that could take that kind of heat, number one. You know, that's the engineer in me speaking, I guess. But I think seven times there is simply a statement of that it was heated up to outlandish proportions. What kind of a furnace was it? What kind of a furnace was it used for? We're not told in the passage. It could have been a furnace that was used for making pottery. It could have been in the midst of a castle to heat the rest of the castle. We don't know. Simply don't know. But it was heated up to such proportions that those that went to place the three Hebrews in the furnace, they were killed simply from that proximity. As for the Hebrews, the only thing that was burned on them was the ropes were burned off of their hands. Their clothing didn't smell of fire. Their hair was not singed. And when they passed through the fire, the Lord said, I will be with thee. And so the angel of the Lord, that is the angel of the covenant, the Lord Jesus Christ, appeared in the flaming fiery furnace with them. They spake freely and moved about freely in the furnace while it was burning and after it had killed their captors who had thrown them in. Obvious miracle that God had sent to witness to his own power to deliver those who do what? Leave outcomes to him. If we can make a use from this, then let's make that use. Let's make uses with regard to worship that we will not turn away from the true worship of God, no matter how costly it is for us. Number two, that if we are given a way out, that we would not use illicit means and we would leave outcomes to the Lord. Number three, that we would trust the Lord to do whatever his holy will is. We have seen some places in history where the Lord did allow his servants to be burned. One that came to mind as I was meditating on this passage was when Latimer and Ridley were tied together to the same stake in England during the persecution of Mary Tudor. Do you remember what Latimer said to Ridley? He turned to him and he said, "Play the man, Master Ridley. For today we shall light a candle in England that shall not be put out." Well, the outcome belonged to God. What happened? Mary was gone in just a short while. But the candle that was lit in that day, that continued to burn brightly. And that candle gives light for us today because we are the inheritors of the Westminster Confession of Faith, which came out of men just like that, one generation or two later. Let's remember that. Let's remember that while those immediate means may not be everything that we could hope for, but God has something great in mind for those who stay in their lanes, refuse to know the end from the beginning and leave that to God and follow those lawful means that he has granted to them, they will be delivered out of the burning fiery furnace. Latimer and Ridley were in a sense delivered, but notice that they also delivered many after them with the candle that they lit. With that then, let's stand and